Welcome to Liberty Real Estate Investors Association, episode number 2. Today we're going to be talking about house hacking reflections. So, you want to say anything, Margo? This is Brian, and this is Margo. And we're going to tell you a little bit about our own house hacking experience we had. In 2015, we decided to move to the state of South Dakota. Why did we do that?
Well, we've always wanted to live in South Dakota in the Midwest. Uh-huh. Yeah. And then I wanted to go back to school.
Okay. So Margo wanted to go back to school. So we started out looking for a place to live. I had wanted a house hack. Margo
didn't know what it was.
House hacking, just for people who don't know, is when you buy a rental property and you live in one side or one of the units and you rent the rest of them out. And then you get a charge rent to the residents living in the other units while you live there for, you know, less than you would buy a house, while at the same time cash flowing on that asset. So we went in May and we looked at a lot of really interesting different units.
Very different.
We were looking all over the city of Sioux Falls. And do you want to talk about that at all?
No, not really. Other than we kind of really were able to figure out which part of Sioux Falls we wanted to live in.
That was good.
You know, we could see the different demographics, the different areas, and pick what we wanted.
And but unfortunately, there in the area that we were looking, when we were first looking, because we went out there for a week, and we looked all around, and then after about 3-4 days, we ended up going and visiting relatives. And it wasn't until we were coming back that our realtor actually had some that had come up on the market that were...
Well, they weren't even listed yet.
Yeah, they were more of a real estate owned, and that's when the bank owns the property, and then they're just looking to sell it because somebody either foreclosed or they ended up getting it back in a deal. So what we ended up doing was going through one right before we got on the airplane, which ended up being the...
Well, and we had originally thought that they weren't even what we wanted. They were too big.
Yeah.
They weren't at all what we were looking for, but we thought, you know, our realtor had given us so much time and devoted like an entire week to us that we thought we would humor him on the way to the airport and stopped at these duplexes.
Yeah, and so we ended up in a 1990s Class B-ish duplex, which was nice because we wanted one that was not up and down. Because all the ones that we looked at were, there were some that were side by side, but there was this one, which was a newer one, and it was two-story up and down with a shared wall, but you wouldn't have to be on the bottom in the basement or on the top and have to worry about the footsteps above you and things, which was kind of nice.
It didn't feel like apartment living.
Yeah, quite so much. So we ended up buying that duplex.
Well, hold on, though. I think you should back up a little bit.
Okay.
Was that we ran through that thing just with the intention that we were humoring our realtor and not really paying attention to anything, like the cupboards, or we just ran around and looked at it, yelled at each other from the loft, you know, that kind of thing, and really played, and then headed off to the airport.
Yeah.
And so when we got back to our home and we're trying to decide which ones to put offers on, we actually wanted another set. Because it was closer to a park. It was just as far as resale and renting and cash flow.
That one was actually 4 units.
It was 4 units.
So it would have had 4 doors.
But it was right out the park, the back door to the park, which was the big draw. And it was in a nice neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And so we'd originally were looking at those. Mm-hmm. And that didn't pan out. And then we ended up buying these ones.
Yeah.
And I didn't remember them to save my life.
Yeah, Margo didn't remember it. We actually referred to it as the cat pee one because the tenant before we moved in there had a cat and they'd gotten the carpets were all just really, they smelled really bad.
And that was one of the big things as to why it wasn't on the market yet when we went to see it was because they were renovating it. They were taking out the old carpet padding. They were redoing drywall painting to get rid of the cat animal smell.
Yeah.
So we moved sight unseen for me. I didn't remember it at all.
Buying it, because the other ones, they were under contract or something happened, and we said, well, really the only one that really makes any sense then is the one we looked at, which was in a very nice area at the end of the cul-de-sac on the west side of Sioux Falls. Ended up getting into it for about $237,000 at the time. And one of the nice things about house hacking is because you can do an FHA owner occupied, you can get a special financing. You can very low down payment. You can get in there. I think 3.5% is about as low as you can go. And the down payment, we ended up around 5%, somewhere in there. And then you also can get a really low interest rate, which you wouldn't get if you're just out on the market buying a rental real estate property. So that's house hacking in a nutshell. Our experience, at least up until that point, I'd learned about it on reading books like Robert Kiyosaki's book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, where he tells you that your house is not an asset. And so looking at that, how do you get the place you live to cash flow? And so that's one of the ways we were looking at it, as well as listening to podcasts on Bigger Pockets. I was listening to them.
I was listening to them by default.
Yeah, Margo would listen because they would be on and she'd have to listen. But so that's how we got into house hacking and really what it is. So we ended up buying the house. We just covered our eyes and jumped into it. And Margo didn't remember the house at all. But I think it really worked out well because it was a newer house. It was more square footage in our half of the house than we had in our single family home that we had moved out of. It was a smaller lot, but other than that, it was really nice in that, from that standpoint.
Because it was still a 3-bedroom, 2.5 bathroom, you know, two-car garage for our half, and then the other half mirrored that.
It was still a very large size home. House. And then our payments, where we ended up paying, was less than what we were paying for our single-family home in Washington. So we ended up with the rental income as well as living in a larger home in Sioux Falls for a monthly payment of less than half of what we were paying for a smaller home in Washington State.
And it was less than what people were paying for a 1-bedroom apartment.
Yeah.
It was chump change, really.
Yeah, it was a good deal. So then what ways would our house have been different if we did not decide to live? So if we kind of talked about it up till now on kind of the good points and why we did it. So now we'll go ahead and talk a little bit about some of the things we wouldn't have done moving to South Dakota if we didn't decide to house hack. So what would we have had differently if we had gone looking for a house instead of looking for a rental property that we live in, one of them?
Oh, we would have had more space. We would have had a backyard. I mean, we had a backyard, but we would have had a space for like gardening and running around and, you know, and barbecuing and having the hot tub and things like that.
Yeah, we would have probably had a little bigger house. Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't have had any income coming in.
Yeah, we wouldn't have had any income. We probably would have been in a similar location, I think, in town, but we wouldn't have had the rental property. I think we would have looked more for a house that was more, it fit us. I think it would have been harder in some ways because we're looking for the right house.
Well, and even where the part of town we were looking, the yards weren't really any bigger, maybe a little bigger. It wouldn't have been shared. I guess that's really what it boils down to.
So why did we decide to house hack? We talked about that a little bit before. And really, from a financial standpoint, it made so much sense. It was the best way to improve our financial position. And like I said before, the house is not really an asset. It's kind of like a savings account that doesn't really have a return. You put your money into it hoping that someday somebody will pay you more than what you've got into it. Like I've said before, we had a much lower monthly payment than we would have. We had almost a 3,000 square foot house, and we rented half of it out, and our monthly payment was, you know, half of what we would have been paying on a similarly sized single-family home if we would have bought it. FHA owner-occupied loan. Low down payment. We did about 5.4% down. And then we did a 30-year fixed for 3.75%, which that was an amazing loan. We're probably stupid for have sold it, but at the same time, it really did well by us and allowed us to move on to the next chapters in our life. So what were your initial thoughts about living in a rental property?
I really didn't give it much thought, I don't think. It was more of, I was really excited to see you so excited. I was excited to move to the Midwest. I was excited to be in South Dakota, and I was excited for a new adventure. Mm-hmm. But I hadn't really given much thought to the fact that we would be living in a rental space.
Yeah.
And then going back to school at the same time, didn't allow myself much time to even really process it. I was quite busy.
You were worried about
passing my class.
I have a college degree to get in 2.5 years and an accelerated program.
Yeah. And so I took 4 years in 2.5 years. So I was and worked full time. So Brian did eventually start to refer to our home as student housing.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was interesting.
All right, your turn to ask me the question.
So what did you learn about living?
Oh, I didn't get to answer the...
Oh, sorry. Yeah. What were your initial thoughts about living in the rental property?
I was all, let's do this. Let's totally do this. I'm ready to do this. I worked really hard on our single family house, fixing it up and putting a basement under it and doing all kinds of fixes. New metal roof, new hardy plank siding, and garden and just...
And patios.
Patios. We put probably 50...
Chicken coops.
Yeah, chicken coops. We put probably 50, 60,000, maybe even more into the property. Mm-hmm. And we did buy right before the housing crash, so that didn't help. But still, we sold for 8,000 more. We sold for less than inflation over the time we owned our house, over what we paid for our house in terms of the nominal value of it. We did do a private sale, which worked out really well for us and the buyer, because there wasn't a commission or anything. It just was a cash deal that was able to be done. But still,
it was weird. It was a knock on the door. You want to sell your house?
Yeah, it worked. It worked.
It worked out.
I mean, it was weird because we could have gotten more, but the thing was we were ready to do this, and the timing was right. Everything worked out well. Really grateful for that transaction too, because it. We actually bought, and here's the other thing, is we were able, because of the cash flow on the property, to buy the rental property before we even sold our house in Washington.
Yes. And I think the other thing for me as far as going into it is that we are all about our bucket lists and wanting to, or goals, I guess, not necessarily a bucket list because we're not dying, but our goals. And one of the goals, obviously, like we said before, was living in the Midwest. Another one was I wanted the four-year degree and not just my nursing license, and you had always wanted to dabble or play in real estate, and so this was a way that we could check so many goals off of our list.
Yeah, I would agree.
So that was really exciting as well.
So I'm all, let's do this.
Yeah.
Let's do this, let's get this done, get you through school.
Yeah.
So what did you learn?
Oh, wow. I learned how to buy property. Because while we were there, we bought the duplex that we moved into, and then we ended up buying one just down the road that matched it. So we ended up buying another one. So I've learned how to buy and sell property. I learned what the language is. I learned what to look for. I learned what a cap rate is.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, cap rates.
I learned to the rule of... The
what
rule
is
of
a
10?
Cap rate? The cap rate is what you would make on the property if you buy the property with cash, basically.
Yeah.
It's what you'll every year get back on
and
your...
And 8 is what you want to look for.
Well, it depends. I mean, that's where interest rates really come in.
Yeah.
Because the higher the better, obviously. But
right. But you don't want anything lower than 8.
The problem is also is that if you get a really high cap rate and a really dumpy property, it normally is because it is such a dumpy property.
Yep.
And so... You might get a really high, you know, return in terms of cap rate.
Yeah.
But so
I just know that in the properties we were looking at, you kept saying nothing less than an 8. And then I learned the 1% rule.
Mm-hmm.
I learned What else did I learn? Oh, I learned what kind of tenants that we wanted to have, what kind of rental properties. I learned what I expected of our tenants and what I didn't expect of our tenants.
Yeah, tenant training was...
I learned how to interact with our tenants.
Yeah.
And I learned that if we did it again, I probably would never manage my own property again. I probably would have a property manager do it.
We definitely learned a lot, and mm-hmm. we learned that really, for our personalities, being a property manager is not our forte. Mm-hmm. We'll be, you know, really awesome nurse and really awesome engineer. And
I'm too nice, and I say, oh, that's okay, you can pay me next month. Then Brian is like, no, you now.
Yeah.
Or I don't want to talk to you.
it was an interesting aspect was learning. So
about halfway through, we transitioned over and had a property manager take over for
us. Which I will say, when you do manage it yourself, you have a higher degree of control. Mm-hmm. But there is something in just not having to deal with any of the management of it.
The phone call that says the toilet is overflowing or the light bulb burned out.
That something really bad has happened mm-hmm. in one of your units and you have to deal with it, or the police or whatever. Mm-hmm. That wasn't fun. So, mm-hmm. so what did I learn? I became a property manager, like we talked about a little bit, dealing with
tenants.
Well,
you actually went and took the class though.
Yeah, I did. I became a property manager in South Dakota, mm-hmm. which was really good. And I learned a lot. People told me, well, why did you do that and not just become a full real estate broker? Because it is a broker's license. So that's something, if you do go through the property management course, you might consider also just becoming a full-fledged real estate broker, other than maybe look into what your errors and omissions license, you know, for having that insurance every month might be something. But I didn't realize that. I just wanted to learn as much as I could about property management. So that's why I took the 1 week course to become a property manager.
1 week. It was a long week, though. It wasn't just five hours a day. It was
about
a big
bed
week.
Bugs and things like that.
Yuck.
Yeah. So I'd recommend
never buy a mattress on Craigslist. That's
anyway,
what we learned.
So, one other thing I learned, I was expecting to be able to buy the first unit, FHA, mm-hmm. really great deal, owner occupy, live there for 6 months. And then
buy the next one
with this exact same. That was my plan. I had it all figured out. Oh, I got it figured out. And then
I actually signed on to that. That was okay.
Yeah. So
I was
then
okay
we
with
live
that.
In one, and six months later, you know, as long as the law said we needed to. But then I come to find out after I was like, well, can I do it again to one of the bankers? And they go, no, you can only have one. And I go, well, that's no fun.
One at a time or one in your lifetime? I think that needs to be clarified
for people.
You can have
one at a time.
Yeah, that needs to be, I just clarified
that.
But
there, I learned later on there's a couple different ways that you can have one in one geographical area, and as long as you can prove that you need to move for work or something else, as long as it's really far away and you move, you could get another one. But it's not like you can just...
So basically what he's saying is we could have kept our one in Sioux Falls, and we could have moved out here because we had to move for work, probably for my work, not so much yours because you're still employed with your South Dakota employer. Yeah. But we moved for my work, at which point we could have gotten another one here.
Or even moving closer to family. We moved back to Washington, be closer to family. Mm-hmm. So
we could have done a second here.
We could have done a second one here, but that we can get into that in a little bit down the road here. So what did you like about house hacking?
So I liked the financial freedom that came with it. Mm-hmm. I liked the ability to put me through a university degree, which was about, what did we decide, 50 to 60,000 by the time we were said and done.
It was about,
And no student loans. We were able to just pay that out of
no
pocket.
No student loans.
And I liked the feeling of pride of ownership and the vested interest in what we had. I know it's a sin, but pride is, you know, is to be able to say we own four doors
bragging
and that
rights.
They're renting.
There's an amount of bragging rights having rental property.
Yeah, there's something to it, especially in the Midwest. It's neat. The other thing was to have the life experiences that we had, to move to the Midwest and learn what we learned and meet the people that we met and have our lives enriched and touched. It was very freeing. I looking back, wouldn't trade it.
Yeah. So you're going to ask me now?
Yeah. Which one? What did you like about house hacking?
What I liked about house hacking was that it really was a vehicle that allowed us to go to the next level financially mm-hmm. as each other. It was when things were going really well, we were able to do everything we were doing and put a bunch of money away mm-hmm. in the bank and toward looking, because we worked. The other thing, even though we house hacked, that was only one piece of the financial equation. Mm-hmm. We worked our tails off. Mm-hmm. You in school full time.
And worked full time.
Accelerated program. You worked 12-hour shifts most weekends.
I worked every Friday, Saturday, and every other Sunday.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. we saw each other once every couple...
2 weeks.
Other than passing in the night.
We once only every 2 weeks.
Yeah, once every 2 weeks we'd have a Sunday together.
Well, and even before the first year, I was working every Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
And after the first year, we decided we couldn't do that anymore. We had to have at least 2 Sundays a month.
Yeah.
It was important not only for us to connect and have time together, but then I needed time off one, but two, I also needed to be able to go to church and to have
social
that
life,
enrichment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that was, what did I learn? It was really powerful when everything was going well to be able to put her through school and sock away, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 every couple months into a stocking for mm-hmm. doing things down the road. So that was incredibly powerful. Mm-hmm. That's what I liked about it, basically. It's allowed us to live at a level and to achieve things and also help people at a level we wouldn't have had if we hadn't house hacked.
Because mm-hmm. that was one of the things that we really was important to us when picking our tenants. I mean, I said that we picked tenants and we held them to a certain standard and a certain caliber of people, but we also chose people who... probably wouldn't have gotten the opportunity otherwise. People who were wanting to make that step from apartment living to buying their own house, and how can we help them in their next step? You know, we charged enough rent that we were making money and we were doing well, but we didn't, and we definitely could have charged more, but we didn't want people to go house broke trying to live their dream as what we were doing. You know, I mean, we stepped into this and we were checking goals and we were doing what we wanted to do. We wanted other people to be able to do that as well. So we definitely didn't charge what we could have for rent, but we charged enough for rent. And I think that's really important, is to, you know, you want to succeed obviously in every business, but you also want to be able to give back.
Yeah. And so we were able to do that. And one of the things I also learned in terms of, I recommend that you learn what HUD and everybody requires of you in order to provide fair housing, because you have to have the same requirements for everyone, whether, you know, color, race, creed, religion, all of these different reasons. And so it was really great in that we established a criteria, like Margo was saying, that you had to have a certain level of credit worthiness, but also we were looking at people who might not have been able to get into that level of housing.
Well, and because we also expected them to have a job. So we expected them to be working. We expected them to be productive members of society. But whether they were working at Burger King or they were working at a bank, we didn't care. Yeah. It was if they had a paycheck.
And they had to have a specific amount of money over what the rent would be.
Yeah.
And that was, if they didn't have that, they couldn't meet it.
We
and that was across the board.
And that was so that, again, like they wouldn't go house broke. So say, for example, I'm just going to throw numbers because it's easier to do even numbers. But say we charge $1,000 for rent. They had to make at least, say, $1,800 a month or $1,500 a month, because we didn't want them to have their rent, have their heating expenses, have their water, whatever the extra bills were, and then they had nothing to take care of their children or to buy groceries or get gas to and from work. So we wanted people, we did not want to put people in a position where they were house broke, but we also wanted to take people and put them in a position where they could get ahead and move, you know, move into the next phase of their life.
I think we used the, it was, they didn't have to have a household income of 3,000 gross.
Something.
A month in order to pay like 1,000. So it was like at least a third.
Mm-hmm. So they could always, we knew they would always pay their, they wouldn't always, but we knew that they could always pay their rent. Mm-hmm. But they also weren't going to be struggling foot to mouth. You know, it was, hopefully going to be beneficial for all involved.
Yeah, which was good. I do think that we were able to do well as mm-hmm. well as do right by the people.
Well, and I think that also really helps. I mean, I think, you know, part of what you put out is part of what you get back, right? So by not being greedy and by not charging as much as we could charge and by not getting as much as we could get out of it, but by offering a gift and by putting it out there, you're getting it in return. I mean, so you're blessing others and you're blessed tenfold in return, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that's...
Well, it's a true...
Because we really lucked out with our tenants. We had wonderful tenants.
It's a true benefit of... a market system is that you deliver a product and of a certain level of service mm-hmm. and a certain value, and mm-hmm. in order to trade their money, which they get from the market, that they're willing to get this much value by paying you this much. Mm-hmm. And the market, everyone, other people we talk to say, well, you know, you could charge here yeah. and keep this yeah. amount of value difference between yeah. what you're charging and what you could charge, mm-hmm. and that you could have kept that. And a lot of people told us that.
Oh, exactly. And another pride of ownership piece was the expectations we had of our tenants, not just financially, but of their living lifestyle. I mean, we were non-smoking, no drugs.
Yeah. No pets either.
No pets. Yeah. But then we also expected, so there was three duplexes on our road. We had the two end caps, and then there was one in the middle that another private owner owned. And you could tell the difference in the quality of tenants. And it was because we, again, vetted our tenants, but we also expected, like, so outdoor burning as far as fire pits are a big thing in the Midwest. And so we wouldn't let them just stack the wood up alongside the house. They had to have a bin mm-hmm. to put their wood in. They couldn't park, you know, three or four cars in their driveway. It was
Or on the lawn.
Yeah. And it had to be groomed. You know, that was the other thing that was helpful, though, too, was the city of Sioux Falls. You weren't allowed to have huge plants. You yeah. weren't allowed to have, you know, so it helped to maintain a manicured, well-looking piece of property. So our tenants also had a huge pride in ownership in having people visit or, you know, showing it off to families. I think of one young family we had, and they were so excited to bring people over and say, mm-hmm. this is our home.
Yeah.
You know,
and
it's
then
a step up.
They weren't able to do that before. Mm-hmm. So that was really neat to yeah. see that. And then to see all of the children playing.
Yeah.
And things like that. So I did like that. Yeah. See the children growing up.
Lots of life.
Yeah. Yeah. So that I really like that about it.
Yeah.
So what did you not like? Now we're going to get into it. Pull the gloves off now.
What didn't I like about it? I did not like sharing a wall. Although mm-hmm. I loved our neighbors. I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. I mean, our neighbor, she has become my very
great
dearest
friend.
Lifelong friend who yeah. Is a significant part of my life and my heart. I mm-hmm. just love them, but I didn't like sharing a wall. Mm-hmm. I didn't like feeling, and I guess I can't say that it was an everyday feeling. It wasn't like every day I woke up in the morning and it was like, man, this sucks. Because I had a lot of really great times and I had a lot of wonderful times there. But I also knew always that it was a rental unit. So coming home and always seeing the other half and knowing we had tenants that mm-hmm. I shared a wall with, it never really felt like my home. Mm-hmm. It never, and we did a good job and we had fun. We made great memories and we hung the pictures on the wall and we tried to, you know, be as homey as we could, but it never was our home because it was always our home and somebody else's. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's what it was.
Okay. So my turn to what I did not like, and this is the biggest thing for me that was hard, is that I didn't mind living in it. Mm-hmm. It was a little cramped, more cramped than I was used to, being able to go outside as much and things. But really, for a man moving into a rental property with his wife was the biggest thing for me, because that's all I heard about the whole time is how she doesn't like living there.
I think, all you heard, but I think that's what steps out in your mind because it went against everything you wanted and hoped for.
Well, for me, I look at it, you know, dollar signs and numbers and cents. I look at the balance sheet. I look at the income statement. And when we were living in a rental property, our amount of money that we were putting away every month in terms of cash flow we were just shoving money into the bank mm-hmm. towards the future and towards hopefully potentially buying more rental property. And so I saw that, and how we were putting her through school mm-hmm. and how The other thing we didn't talk about was the tax benefit. The tax benefit was really a good thing. I mean, you can write off all of your rentals, the expenses towards your rentals, the, not for the half you're living in, but for the rest of it. And since we were making a significant amount of money every year, we could then write off those expenses towards our income, which significantly reduced our tax liability. Mm-hmm. Which is one of the benefits of real estate if you've ever looked at it from a tax liability standpoint. So I didn't like that my wife seemed really, really unhappy. The kitchen's too small. I'm tired of living in a rental.
You thought the kitchen was small too, though.
I did, but it wasn't the end of the world for me. You know, it was functional. It worked very well. We couldn't both be in there together at the same time. But that was the hardest thing for me, was having to deal with an unhappy wife living in it. And it wasn't that she was unhappy all the time, but you know, if you hear four or five things in this course of a month about how she doesn't like it, and she always says she wants something else, is really for a man who wants the best for his wife, that made it very difficult for me. So that was a challenge. I honestly, being cooped up in a rental property, coming from a more rural setting into the city, it was more difficult to be outside, and it didn't really have a place to go and garden, didn't have a place where I could just go into the shop and weld or work on
the equipment. You also had a hard time with the neighbor. It just is not our rental neighbors, but on the other side of us, there was an apartment complex. You had a hard time with the lights and the sounds.
Yeah, the lights, the noise, the
smells.
The Jeep that doesn't have a muffler, getting up at 4 in the morning and getting home at 3 in the morning or whatever.
The smells.
The smells were a little different. But the smells in that part of town, if you're in Sioux Falls, you'll know that there's a pork plant there. And so
that was the other side of town.
The other side of town, we didn't normally smell it. We got farm smell sometime. Mm-hmm. Or we get cigarette smoke smell.
Or
sometime.
We'd get our neighbor's wall. They would burn the scentsy stuff.
Some type of an air freshener type of thing. Or you don't realize that even if someone else has a little bit different cooking style than you, you'll smell that different cooking style.
Bacon. That was my favorite. And they'd have Sunday dinners, and they would sometimes have BLTs for dinner.
It smelled great, but sometimes it's just you get a smell you weren't expecting. So that's something else that you'd have.
Well, it was interesting.
Okay, how would you do it differently?
How would I do it differently? I think if we were to do it again, I probably would go into it with different expectations. I guess part of my problem this time was that I was expecting to be a rental unit, but I wasn't expecting to have the feelings that I felt. And I'm wondering if some of that was because we moved so far away and we had nobody, we had nothing, we didn't have our own space. You know what I mean? I'm wondering if that was part of it. But I think doing it differently, I would definitely change my expectations. I would definitely change my mindset, but I'd also be in a very different place emotionally doing it. Because we grew a lot out there. We learned a lot. We learned a lot, not only about house hacking and who we are as people and about what our limits are and what and how much we can do beyond what we once thought were our limits, but we also learned a lot about establishing into a community.
Yeah.
So I think that if we were to do it again, it would be significantly easier. But as far as what I would do differently, I don't know that there's much I'd change.
Yeah. For me,
I don't.
For me, I would probably have tried to get into a fourplex.
Oh, have more doors.
Have more doors with that. And you can only do, a duplex, triplex, fourplex with the FHA financing. Because anytime you get more than four doors, it puts you into the more commercial real estate, five doors and more. And basically, you're printing money is what you're doing. And anytime that you take out a loan, the bank doesn't have to have all that money. So for you to be able to put down 3.5% and basically create $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, you're getting to do what Wall Street and the banks do. And so by having a fourplex, originally with 3.5% down, that we would have gotten a lot bigger asset. Mm-hmm. The problem also is that we had a vacancy that was pretty long. We were lucky the first, I mean, the rental market was just hotter than anything when we first moved mm-hmm. in. But as a lot of new doors came online mm-hmm. in kind of the 2016, 17, 18, the rental market kind of softened a little bit. Not a lot, but enough that we had about a six months of one of our units being empty. And so you lose half of the revenue on a property versus a quarter.
Which was interesting that we had a hard time getting a renter in there, but we had no trouble at all selling the units.
Yeah.
And that, you know, so people were still hot to buy, mm-hmm. you know, multifamily, but the families weren't hot anymore to rent in a multifamily.
The rental market has softened a little bit just because they brought so much on. You have years and years of low interest rates, and they're just building all of these big, huge apartment buildings in town. And not that you can't get one, it's just we noticed that it softened. But still getting a fourplex versus a duplex, if you have a vacancy in anything higher than a duplex, you lose half of your, if you're living in the other side and you have a, you know, a vacancy, you lose all your revenue. Whereas if you have a fourplex and you have three more doors and you only have one vacancy, you still only lost a third of your revenue. But the problem is finding the product, the fourplex, that is a nice one that
your wife will live in.
And if you're single, I definitely recommend
100%
house hacking every day of the week.
Well, and I think that if you're a young couple starting, it's definitely beneficial. I think for us where we were, our daughter was grown and out of the house, so we, you know, empty nesters. It's just the two of us and our dog. This is where I was going. Younger generation, younger people, younger couples. I think where we were, which was our child was grown and out of the house and it was just the two of us, so it was a really good opportunity to try. Mm-hmm. But I think that if I were to do it again, or I would do it again. Let me rephrase that. Not if I were going to do it again, but what house hacking did for us was it put us in a position where we now can live in a home with things that we've always wanted to have in a single family home. But also we are financially in a position where we could buy real estate and rent it and have multifamilies and not have to do the house hacking, not have to live in it. So house hacking was definitely a catapult to allow us to get to that place in our life, I think.
Sure. And then we, talking about kind of how things swing around, is we went from moving into a bigger rental property than we had in a single family, but we kind of, we like a pendulum swinging, we swung way back the other way. Because we bought a house that's way too big. It's way more extravagant than anything we'd ever expected. It's not in a really big metropolitan area where we've had, you know, significant growth year on year, but it's in a good, somewhat growing area part of the state. So
yeah, but it also was something that we were able to do while we were in South Dakota in the duplex was create our list of what would our perfect house have, or what would our perfect property have, or what is it truly? I mean, everybody has these dream homes, you know, of what you want for your dream home. But it allowed us to really step back and say, what is it that's really important in a house? What is it that is, you know, you're unhappy in this duplex? Why are you unhappy? What is it that will make you happy for both of us? And we were both able to make those lists.
Yeah. And so for me, it was just having a shop and some land to work on outside.
Space of your own.
Space of my own too, but really for me, it's a shop and place to work on things. Because quite honestly, for me, a house could be a small kitchen, like a living room and a bed to sleep in. For me, that's what it is for me, with a big, giant shop.
And then the yard. But then you also really wanted the office, you know, what you called your nerd lair.
For work.
It was, you know, to find this place, checked all of Brian's boxes. You know, it had the shop, it had the property, it had a space for an office to do not just your 9-to-5 job, but also your work that you do with the family business. Mm-hmm. You know, it allowed that freedom. Yeah. For me, it was really important that I had a bathtub that I could, you know, a large bathtub mm-hmm. that I could soak in, a large kitchen.
Big kitchen. For you, the big kitchen.
It was the big kitchen. Really, yeah. That was it. So we ended up buying a house that was way too big.
Yeah.
So.
All right. I think that's a good wrap up. So this has been Liberty Real Estate Investors Association Episode 2, House Hacking Reflections. So thank you for joining us today. Remember that in Liberty, all our rights come from God. And on this planet, all our earthly rights are derived from private property. Thank you.